Hey, everybody, and welcome to Coach's Corner. I love this episode. We talk about love and relationships and sexuality and femininity. I think this one probably is more for the ladies, but men, you can learn a lot about women if you listen to this episode. My guest is Alexandra Roxo. She's an artist, best-selling author, spiritual teacher, and transformational coach. She's been featured as a guest speaker on so many podcasts and events. She was also in two seasons of Netflix hit show Too Hot to Handle, and her work has been featured in New York Times, Vogue, Guardian, and much more. You can learn more about her at alexandraroxo.com. One thing that we talk about a lot on this episode is calling in love, and I mentioned our program Be the Queen several times. This is a program that Steph and I teach. We do have the Evergreen version, which is available at anytime, christinehousford.com/be the queen. And we are also going to be hosting another live cohort, probably starting in late summer or fall. And that's where we teach it live and you get the coaching from us. And it's just really, really juicy. So if you want to get on the early bird list for that and get discount pricing when we start to launch that, make sure to go to christinehousford.com/queen and you will be the first to know. That program is limited in the amount of people that we teach live so that we can really give the coaching and support that we find is such a valuable part of that program. So again, if you want early bird discount pricing and early bird notification, go to christinehousford.com/queen and you will be the first to know about the pricing and the dates. Again, that is our program specifically for women calling in. Epic, healthy, amazing love. Before we dive in, I want to thank my sponsor for this week, which is Organifi. I love Organifi products. I love all of their products. I want to tell you a little bit more about their Organifi Gold, which is my treat that I have every afternoon. I say every afternoon, if I'm working and I'm home, I have that kind of little slump where I want something sweet. And my answer is Organifi Gold. So what it is this delicious superfood tea that contains super powerful superfoods and mushrooms to help you relax so that you can feel refreshed and recharged. It also tastes freaking amazing. So amazing. I mix it with a little almond coconut milk creamer, serve it hot, and it just calms my nervous system and gives me that nice both regulation, relaxation, and satisfies that little sweet craving that I have. It's made from 9 superfoods. It's 100% USDA organic, low in sugar, and actually helps you have a better night's rest too because of the lemon balm, the reishi, and then the turmeric and ginger really help with recovery, inflammation. It's just so delicious and nutritious. So get that and all Organifi products at Organifi.com/overit for 20% off or use promo code overit at checkout. That's Organifi.com/overit. All right, and now on to my conversation with Alexandra. Alexandra, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you. I know this is going to be a really juicy conversation.
Oh, I'm so glad to meet you. You are an inspiring person out there in the space, and I've been following you for years and really appreciate your voice.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think we're going to start with what we were talking about before we started recording. You popped on and said hello, and you just look so energetic and vital and beautiful and rested. And then you're like, oh, I just had a baby 4 months ago. And I said, oh, that was not me for 4 months postpartum. It's barely me now. What is your secret?
Great question. I mean, my secret is my partner. I have to praise him. And you know, I didn't grow up with this imprint around seeing a partnership or a relationship or a marriage that really functioned. I grew up in a household where my parents were divorced when I was 5. My mom was a stressed out single mom. She did great. She did her best. She had me when she was 27. I had my baby at 39. So I have lived a lot longer life. I've had time to do some of the deepest healing work for myself before having a child, which felt very important to me and my partner. And so we're both in a place where we can support each other and be present with each other and not get stressed out. And that to me felt really important, that I wanted to have a child. And this isn't a choice that everyone can make, but I wanted to have a child when I felt strong, stable, secure, that I had done enough of my healing and that my partner was going to be there for me. And so we both love hanging out with our daughter. We love her so much. And we both work from home, and we have, like, I'm in our cute little back studio that's away from our house so we can have time to see clients, because we both work for ourselves and we both work as coaches and we see clients and we teach. So we're able to toggle back and forth in childcare. And I tell you, it's a joy. It's a joy to spend 2 hours with her and then for my partner to take her. And then, you know, we can plan around in that way. And even the night times, early on, I was like, okay, I'm not going to do this like I didn't sleep in two years thing. And that's one of the beliefs I'm not going to take on from the collective, and from even some of my best friends who are moms are like, you're not going to sleep for a year. I'm like, don't project onto me. So early on, my partner and I figured out kind of a way, because we co-sleep with our baby, which was a choice that we made in a really safe way. But I realized if we're all sleeping in the bed, I was going to be the one who wasn't getting the sleep. So he takes half of the night shift and I take the other half. And this was something that my dear friend Sophie Jaffe told me. She said, look, see if you can, after a month, get a bottle. I'm giving you guys details here. You may not want the details, but
we did the same thing. We did the same thing. I did the first part of the night and he did the second part.
Exactly.
To be on her own at like 9 or 10 months. Yep.
And it works. And he was out of town for 5 days teaching an immersion. And I was like, this does not work. The sleep deprivation hit me pretty quick. And I was like, okay, yeah. So the key is for us is like, we're really doing it together.
Yeah. I really love that. So let's talk about calling in your partner. This is an area I'm super passionate about. We teach a course about it because it was a big part of my journey. I have been engaged 3 times, married twice. And my husband now that I have my daughter with, I didn't meet him till I was almost 40 and had my daughter in my 40s, naturally at home. So like breaking that myth that, yeah. And that was something I had to say, keep your projections to yourself when people were like, you're gonna have such a hard time getting pregnant. And I didn't. The whole like geriatric pregnancy thing cracks me up. Nice. So what I really love to help people, especially women, like really feel into is not just the possibility, but the reality of what calling in love can feel like and look like. So can you speak a little to your journey of what that looked like for you? Because you have found someone that you feel really met by and really supported by, and I imagine really attracted to as well. Mm-hmm. And I imagine there was a lot of no's you had to say to get to that point.
Yeah. So falling in love for me and loving was never a problem. And in my own journey of healing around intimacy, because of my own fear of abandonment based off my childhood, I would relationship hop, and I was kind of like, had a little, like, always there was somebody around the corner. And, you know, I never didn't have a relationship until I stopped. And I really looked at my life and I was like, wow, from age, like, I don't know, 10 to like 30, I've been in back-to-back relationships. Now we can go as deep as we want into the pathology of that, but we'll leave that aside for a moment. And we'll just look at it from the perspective of the healing journey that I've been on and what happened after I decided to say, you know what? I actually don't want a relationship hop. I don't want to kind of be in this exciting new relationship energy all the time. I want strong, stable, steady, secure. So what do I have to do within myself in order to attract that type of energy into my life? Because it's very different than when you're in like a girlfriend, you know, kind of sparky biochemical thrill ride style of attraction in a relationship. Not that you can't have that, especially at the beginning of a deep, long-lasting partnership. But what I found is that there was probably going to be a different tone to the person that I met and to the way that I felt when I met them. And that was true. From the time that I decided that I was ready to be in a long-term partnership and the time I met my partner, there was, I guess, like 6 or 7 year stretch where I was like, okay, I'm ready. And I was not ready.
Yeah.
I recognized that by the people I was attracting in who were reflecting all the things that I still needed to look at in my own behaviors, patterns, in my own ways that I was closing to intimacy, trying to control intimacy, fear of trust, surrender, healing I needed to do around men, wanting to be with a strong alpha man, but then not wanting to surrender. Like there was just so much for me that happened in those years. And during those years, I also like stepped into deep plant medicine work. I stepped into polarity and intimacy practice with great teachers. And I set myself on a journey of like, I know that it's possible to have the love I want and to meet someone who really fulfills something on a, like a deep cellular level for me. When it showed up, it didn't look like I thought. And there were so many hurdles that my ego had to get through in order to receive the love, which was amazing. And it makes total sense, right? Like, it's not like, oh, here's my manifestation checklist and it's going to all look exactly like I want to because I can control everything.
Wouldn't that be nice?
And it was like, oh no, this actually looks different. This requires me to put more skin in the game. This requires me to surrender some of my ego and preferences. And that journey was so beautiful and also creating a deep, secure attachment with my partner. I think some relationships, you don't kind of see the material that wants to alchemize, like the curriculums, till later. Some people are like, oh, we've been together for a few years and now all this stuff's coming up. For us, it was like we met and we're so deep in the work that we do in terms of our healing and spirituality that we met and we're like, okay, everything is right here on the table in terms of how we're going to trigger each other. And are we willing to say yes to your shadow? And am I willing to say yes to, you know, your SHIT? Am I willing to say yes to you, the things you're still working on? But I know that you're working on them. And that's what's important. And so, you know, we both said yes to each other's, you know, schmutz and patterns and shadows, and then got to work through them together. And then we created a deep, secure bond. And that's been part of our journey, which led us into becoming parents. I mean, that's years in a nutshell, of course.
Yeah. How many years you've been together now?
Four.
Or, yeah, that was my husband and I before we had our daughter too. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the most common ways women think they're ready, but they're not. Because I hear this a lot in our program, Be the Queen. I'm like, I've done all this work and I'm so ready. And I do think there's a reality. There was definitely, I would say, a year and a half when I was really ready. But knowing now who my husband is, he wasn't. So there actually was legitimacy to me saying, I am ready. But I was in the waiting room. Like I had to wait for him to catch up. So I do think that's a reality. But I want to talk about when we think we're ready because we've quote unquote done all this work. What are some of the most common things you've observed in your work that are more the subconscious things women aren't aware of that actually aren't making them ready?
Yeah. So first I will say is the preferences that are coming from the ego. So sometimes we don't even know that we have these high barriers to entry. And some of that I do blame media, pop culture, the time periods we grew up in, what we saw on TV. And some of it is also kind of the culture around manifestation and like, I can have everything I want when I want it. So in my experience, especially along the spiritual path, it's there is an element of surrender and surrendering control, which is infused in this surrender of some preferences. So you have to look at where your preferences are coming from, right? Are they coming from the deepest part of your heart's yearning, or are they coming from your wounds? If your preferences are coming from your wounds, then that's something to really consider, right? So for instance, I'm totally going to out myself here, you guys. So I'm outing myself. When I saw my now deep, deep beloved, I was like, he's bald. I wouldn't go after a bald guy, you know? And that was my first impulse because I was just reading from the part of me that thought love has to look a certain way. And then when I heard words come out of his mouth, I can't say it because I get kind of giggly. I my whole body melted because I was like, oh my God, this guy is so hot. And so if I would have just, let's say, let my eyes and the conditioning, the social conditioning there make the decision for me, then I wouldn't have said yes, right? So I let my felt sense, my deep feeling, my heart be what ended up making the decision. So that's just one, that's one piece, right? Like, what are the parts of your ego's preferences that actually are not connected to the depth of who you are, and really getting real with that? So I see that a lot with women who have these high barriers to entry. Like, he doesn't make X dollars, he doesn't look like this, et cetera. And there's so many great men out there. And it's just like, wow, why are you saying no to this love? Another piece that I see is women who are, quote unquote, ready for love, but it's so powerful, incredibly so, and in a beautiful way, but they don't know that leading with their strength and their power and their badassery is actually pushing away a man, because they want a man who is as strong or stronger, hopefully, than them, but they're leading with this kind of, I'm woman, hear me roar, I'm powerful, I am, you know, boss babe, multimillionaire, whatever it is for whoever is listening, but leading with that instead of leading with their hearts. Because leading with the heart is more vulnerable. That means showing up on a date and not listing off your resume, right? Not coming with your accomplishments or whatever it is, but staying in the vulnerable place in your heart. So I see that also. I also see the inability to be led, which is kind of piggybacks off of that, which I see and I hear it in some of my girlfriends, like, oh, you know, I didn't like the place he chose for dinner on the date, so I suggested something else, you know, like not giving up the lead. So, you know, this is something I've studied a lot and I work on a lot in my own practice and relationship. So I could keep going and going, but those are three good ones.
You know, I think so much of it too comes to just unresolved childhood stuff that we think we've resolved, but that just is, there's a younger part that's looking for something that you didn't get from parents, primarily dad. But mom too, that impacts our ability to truly discern and to truly be attracted to people in a healthy way. You know, I call that kind of drug infatuation hotness you were talking about before issue-based relationships, because it's often like the chemistry that keeps you there. Because if you were just logical about it, you'd be like, this is a shit show. Like, I'm not doing this. But because the chemistry is so good, we're often pulled to those. But I feel like those childhood wounds that, and women listening might be saying, but I've done that. I've done a lot of work. You know, I think it's really getting down to the microscopic truth of what attracts you to someone and what you're really looking for. Are those things that you haven't fully owned and embodied in yourself? Or are those things you didn't get from your family of origin that you're looking for? And how is that impacting your ability to really choose from the place you are now and actually be open to people that you generally rule out because they didn't fit either of those two categories? So much of this is subconscious, which is why like making lists is great, but I often encourage women to tear up the list and really surrender because it's just like, it puts you in limitation. You know, you think a list puts you in possibility, but it also puts you in some degree of limitation. And you know, there was a huge thing with my husband too, that I was like, oh my gosh, this is not like, we've talked about it openly on the show. I mean, I always had in my mind that I have to have someone who's financially at or above the place I am. Otherwise XYZ problem will occur. I won't be attracted or whatever.
Right.
And that was not the case with my husband. He was in debt and it was almost a deal breaker to me, but I really had to feel into, is he in debt because he is like a dreamer and doesn't have potential? Or is he in debt because he's just never had a muse? And what I had to feel into, and in time we had together, and just the ways that I, luckily I had done a lot of work and didn't go into coaching him and being his business manager, but really went into loving him and being his muse. It was like, oh, he all of a sudden started making money because of the, there was just something he needed. So I love that, you know, we're talking about, you know, what, cause I know that frustration. Cause I was one of those women that's been like, I have done the work. Why isn't this happening?
Yeah.
So if you're that woman listening right now, what would be some of the top things you'd recommend they either ask themselves or they pursue in terms of personal development and being curious?
Mm. Well, I think kind of referencing what you said about the childhood stuff, and I say stuff with like a smile on my face, our childhood traumas, experiences, issues, et cetera, that we still carry in our day-to-day present reality. So what I would recommend is instead of trying to fix and heal and get rid of all of it, which I definitely tried to do all of that, I would just get to know all of your patterns, the way you close down, the way you avoid, the way you overcompensate, whatever it is for you. Not to beat yourself up about it, but just to know yourself so that when you step into relationship, because the thing is, these things are going to arise, whether you've done a ton of work or not. You will have things that arise. You will have unconscious patterns that arise. The best thing you can do is know them and understand them and feel what they feel like. What does it feel like in my body when I start to get triggered, when I feel small, when I feel abandoned, when I feel rejected? What do I usually do? Do I go into defense? Do I go into blame? Do I go into silence? Do I freeze? All of these things are going to be so helpful for you, because as you get into the partnership, whenever it arises, you have to just be okay with that you will get triggered. You will trigger each other. Things will arise. And what you can do and how you can be so helpful to this incredible man or partner that's coming your way is to be able to help them to understand you, especially at the beginning, because he wants to love you and wants to understand you and doesn't want to trigger you, right? And so when these moments come up and you know, like that little girl you is feeling so abandoned and so scared, but then this kind of persona mask comes on of like, I'm cool, I've got it, I'm fine. If you know yourself well enough to know that that's a mask that you wear when you're scared, you can tell your partner or your date, or hopefully not the first date, maybe we'll save this till a few months in, but you can tell your partner, hey, I'm feeling like I want to just muscle through this moment and be like, I'm cool, I'm fine. But inside, the little girl inside of my heart is really scared. I'm scared that, you know, you're going to go, or I'm scared that whatever it is. For you to be able to have a language to express to whoever it is that gets to know you is so helpful. And I don't mean that you need to become, you know, a therapy partner with your new beloved. No, that's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about knowing yourself and being vulnerable, right? In the moments that you could choose being self-sufficient, but instead being vulnerable. So that's where the work that you've done on yourself gets to be put into practice with a partner. So that's definitely one thing. It was kind of a long thing. Do you want me to do two more?
Yeah, do it. Do it.
Okay, cool. Okay, so that's one thing. Another thing that's going to help you is to enjoy yourself and to know what turns you on, what puts you in your pleasure, what lights you up, and to be close to that, especially as you're potentially opening your heart with someone new and all of the triggers or all the fears are coming up, right? Like, is it going to last? Is it good enough? Is this the right one? Whatever those things are for you. Having some sort of a practice of feeling good in your body and feeling alive and radiant that has nothing to do with him or whoever the other person is, nothing to do with them, so that you feel juicy and vibrant on your own, right? And so you're not depending on this person to give you the feeling of feeling good, to give you the feeling of feeling alive, that you're coming full to the table As a woman, especially, that's going to help you so much. And you can do that by gathering with other women. You can do that by dancing. You can do that by pleasure practices, whatever it is that lights you up, being and staying close to that, especially when some of the childhood stuff is coming up or any of the fears. And I would just, the sort of third one is an extension of that, is to have a spirit of curiosity and play and to let the moment unravel without trying to put an overlay of where is this going? What is the future of this? And is it going to meet all my needs? And all of these things that kind of begin to contract and constrict the relational feel between two people. I know that's a lot of assignments for you, everyone, but I know you can do it and you know you can.
No, I think that's so beautiful. Thank you for that. One of the things you talk about in your book is the internal archetypes that we find within ourselves. And I'd love you to talk about some of those and how we can connect to those and actually help ourselves feel more deeply.
Yeah, great question. So in my book, I talk about sort of these inner archetypes of feeling, which are really fun. And there are probably hundreds, but some of my favorites would be can I read just a little bit of that, that list for you?
Yeah, of course.
But I do want to also touch on the just overall universal archetypes, because those are going to be important also if you're someone who enjoys expanding and expressing yourself in different ways, especially as a woman. In the book, I go into the archetypes of feeling, around feeling, and how we have these almost like little alter ego shadow selves and how they feel. And I'll just read a few of these feelers. The I feel nothing and I never have, and I just don't feel a lot, and the good feels okay and the bad feels okay, but I don't cry much and I wish I did sometimes and I'd like to feel more, but this is just how I am feeler. The I shut down because things were too hard as a kid and now I don't feel feeler. The I used to hold it in and smile and be pretty and sweet and now I feel things and it's insane and I don't know where to put all these feelings feeler. So those are a few ways that we feel. And I think that it is an essential piece of knowing yourself in partnership to know what your tendencies are, right? Like, you know, some of these, the ones that err towards drama, high drama, catastrophe, or keeping everything cheerful, or not having boundaries. All of those are different, let's say, I wouldn't call those archetypes, more patterns and tendencies around feeling. And the feeling is the language of the heart. And so that's why those are important to know. Like, I like calling them shadow selves. There are the different shadow selves that come through when we're triggered or when we're scared. If you're working in a more psychological, context, you could call them parts. I like to make it a little artsy and to give them kind of names and personas. And the archetypal piece to that is that they do relate to this universality as humans that we have, right? Like,
right,
the ability to go into high drama, to rage, to be wild, to be like sensual and sexy and sweet. And all of that exists within us. The language of the heart is we get to play with how we bring some of those things forward. When I'm working with women in a feminine embodied space, we work with how we bring those through the whole embodiment. And so we work with like, okay, Christine, if you're feeling a little contracted or closed in a certain area of your life, which archetype could we use to call forward more of you there, right? So let's say you could use a little bit more wild woman, or you could use a little bit more like, fuck you, teen rebel. you can play with those things. And in a retreat setting, I play with those, like putting on music, and we just kind of get wild and free and we embody different archetypal expressions. And that's like on the overall physical, energetic holistic way. When it comes to the heart, though, you can look at it really similarly. It's like, what would this moment between me and my partner need in order to open, right? If you're stuck, what would it need? Maybe it would need me bringing forth my playful heart and coming up to his heart and acting like a cute little kitten, right? Because he's kind of has a scowl on his face because I upset him or whatever. What would this moment need? Maybe it needs a piece of your tenderness, and that's part of your tender heart. And so those different qualities or textures are archetypal in nature, and they do exist. What we get to do is use them to create deeper intimacy, not just for fun, but to create deeper intimacy.
I love that. What archetype? I know this is a huge generalization question, but you've worked with thousands of women over the years. Which one do you think women have the most access to? And which one do you think women have the least access to? Maybe access is the wrong word, but you know, which one do we kind of overindulge in, and which one do we need to bring to the party a little more?
That's a good one. Well, one of the shadow archetypes that I see women so good at is like people pleaser, good girl martyr. And I would say that's the shadow side. So I'm going to give the high side too. Okay. But if I were to put a bunch of women in a room in a circle, the thing that I'm going to see usually first is women being like, hello, how are you? You know, being in this kind of, oh, you're sitting there. Oh, no. Okay. I'll sit there. Right. So like this kind of social norm of people pleaser or good girl or martyr, and how that shows up in intimacy is not cute. When we start doing that to our partners, it is not an invitation for a deeper love or sex, right? That we people please them, or we act like we're just the good girl. Unless you're doing it in a kinky way and it's a part of a whole role play, that's a whole different scenario. But that is a shadow that I see in a lot of women, in a lot of modern women. I would say the high side archetype that I see in most modern women is our fucking delicious capacity, strength, and capability. And so in that same room that I just created in your imagination, if that circle of women, if there were, say, a stack of chairs, and I walked in and I said, oh, wait, the circle's not set up. I guarantee you within 2 minutes, the women would have that circle set up. It would be perfect. The chairs would be set, whatever else needed to happen, because we are capable and we are strong. And that is an archetype that I see so much: strength, capability. And that has taken a while because likely our ancestors and our great grandmothers didn't quite have access to the embodiment of such strength and independence that we do have now. The thing that I see women needing or craving more of when we go into the archetypal embodiments is just the wild, juicy sexuality. It's, you could call it sacred slut. You could call it just pure sex. You could call it sensual goddess, sex goddess, whatever that archetype is. I see women still holding back there. And that makes sense for our conditioning as well. It's kind of the opposite of the good girl, right? That we could be in a room, let's say, of other women and reveal something that is we've been taught is so private. And it is so private in a way. In a workshop space, we play in those spaces, but it isn't, in my opinion, that archetype isn't to be brought out, you know, on the street and like it your friend's wedding, but it is something to have access to in yourself so that you can bring it out in your intimacy. And that takes practice. So if we're in our boss babe kind of hat and persona and archetype most of our days, and then we want to switch on to our sacred sex goddess, and we haven't touched it in a long time, it's going to be like doing a dance move that you're not practicing. Mm-hmm. It's going to feel a little clunky. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I recommend that women have a practice where they can do that even at home, even if it's a sensual dance practice, where it's like one song, you in the mirror every day, or for me as a new mom, I've just been doing it in the shower. I'm like, okay, I'll put on one song. I have 5 minutes to remind myself that I'm not just mother. I'm not just coach or author or, you know, partner, but I'm also this juicy, sensual being.
I love that. I think that's so important. And I know society is a big reason. I also think just the way we live is a big reason. I think women are just doing too much. Yeah. I don't know how you feel about that, but I just feel like there's just such a depletion going on where it's sort of like, yeah, I'd love to have sex or I'd love to dance or I'd love to like tap into that, but I'm so tired and I'm so depleted and my mental load is so huge.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, it's sort of like I found that enlivening that sexual archetype, that more sacred slut or whatever we want to call it, actually gives me the energy in so many ways. But then there are times when I'm like, oh my God, I just can't be bothered. Like,
totally. Yeah. And so I think you're right. We have a lot on our calendars and I've been trying to get unbusy for years. And it's just, it is, I think if you're an ambitious, creative woman who loves doing what you do, it's like, it's very hard to say, no, I want to keep a lot of space open on my calendar because we love what we do and we're so inspired. So it's a double-edged sword, you know, to be able to create the space to just luxuriate in the day and to like enjoy it. Just, you have to carve out hours. You have to literally put time in the calendar where nothing is there, you know, for those deep, sexy moments to occur. For me, it's the weekend. I'm like, that's when the sexiness is going to happen. That's when I'm going to really hold that time that nothing gets on my calendar. And I would like it to be more than just the weekend eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. And it will. I think we also, there's seasons of life that are super huge for us to embody. One of the things I love talking about, we talk about this in our Be the Queen program too, is just some misconceptions about what being feminine is. And I think a lot of women think they're in their masculine energy, but they're actually not. They're in protective strategies that appear masculine. And, you know, one of the biggest misconceptions that I like to bust about femininity is that it's this like flowy, just go with the flow, don't really get things done place. And I'm like, no, ma'am, the feminine is so discerning and it's actually in so many ways, I don't want to say productive, but just more specific. Like if you're truly in your feminine energy, you're so discerning that it's like, this is a yes and this is a no. So I love to help women really like understand that their feminine energy isn't going to make them unproductive. Cause I think that's one of the fears a lot of women have. They really like doing things in the world. Right. So I'd love you to riff a little bit about some of what the misconceptions about being in your feminine and feminine energy are.
Yeah. Well, I love what you said. It's, for me, it's not about the doing, but it's the energy that's coming through the doing, right? So you could watch two different women cleaning the kitchen and you could have one woman and you could tell her, I want you to clean the kitchen, like with the energy of that this is bringing you so much joy and pleasure and you're having such a great time and your life is amazing and that this is a devotional art of cleaning. And you could watch her. And then you could have someone else and you're like, I want you to clean the kitchen like you hate doing this and that you have so many other things to get done. And you could watch these two women's bodies and the way they're moving through this space. So they're doing the exact same task, but the spirit that they're bringing to their lives is different. And so to me, that's what we're talking about. It's like, yeah, you can be a I don't know, a construction worker, right? And you can do that with your beautiful, full spectrum feminine. Or you can do it from a place of hardness or stress or like closure. So when we talk about like what is feminine, what feels feminine, it is very particular to you and how that energy runs through you. If you're looking at the archetype of nature, nature as this kind of feminine consciousness or this feminine creatrix, there's everything. There's the most brutal most brutal death and disgusting things that happened in nature and fierceness, and it's death and life and all shades between. And there's the most delicate, delicate beauty, right? So if we're looking at the feminine archetypally, we're looking at all of that, that we have the capacity to be that creator and destroyer. To me, the indoctrination of all the stereotypes of feminine, we get to redefine what all that means. Some of the things you may come back around to. I talk about this in my first book, Fuck Like a Goddess. I'm like, I had to take a few years where I didn't wear makeup and I didn't shave my armpits because I just wanted to see what I really liked. And then I came back around and now I really, I love lipstick and I love adorning myself and I loved making myself into a work of art, but I got to choose. And the thing is, we each get to choose what feels good in our being and in our bodies and what feels like it brings us closer to the lusciousness of our breasts or our hips or our thighs or our wombs, the things that feel feminine to us, right? So it's very, very personal, and it can be done in any scenario. You know, I have an incredible client who I've been working with who's a Hollywood film director, and she's like in like a very quote unquote masculine environment often, right? On a film set, there's usually a lot of men. She does it with the most luscious, feminine, pleasure-filled nature. She doesn't rush. She doesn't stress. Not that that's feminine or not, but that's what she chooses. And she enjoys it so deeply, brings her radiant heart through, and that's part of her practice. So to me, it's not about really what we do, but how we do it. And I love, I had another client who works in international banking, and we did so much work to bring her feminine forward so that she could be who she is in the job she's in.
Yeah, I think it's so much about authenticity, not trying to be like the feminine archetype that you see portrayed out in the world, just really finding what feels authentic to you. Because yeah. I know when I was in my quest of really tapping into my feminine power, and it's mostly in my 30s, and I went to all these retreats and I, you know, did my flower crown moon dances, and I'm like, this is not really me. This is not, I mean, I love the moon. I love the moon cycles, nothing against flower crowns, but that's like, I'm not super enjoying this. But then I found other things that I really did enjoy, you know, like actually just going out by myself and spending time under the moon and looking at how that affected my cycles and my rhythms and everything like that, and gathering with women in other ways, more talking and sharing and connecting. Like, and that's probably a silly example, but I just wanted to give something tangible about like how there can be this pressure that it has to look a certain way versus finding the way that it expresses in you. Because I think that's coming back to calling in a partner. That is so key, because subconsciously, especially as women, from very early on, we have been conditioned to be chameleons. I mean, one of the feminine superpowers is we're so adaptable, but that can be a detriment as well. You know, if we abandon self to be adaptable, then we're losing that authenticity. Mm-hmm. So going back to what you said about one of the archetypes women do so well, the people pleasing. I just had someone talk on the podcast, I think it was last week, about people pleasing and perfectionism. And it's a big thing to unpack. But I'd love to ask you specifically where people pleasing shows up in love and relationships and how that can really like set us up for resentment and heartbreak.
Oh, it's so big. And it shows up a lot, and it shows up as codependency, right? So codependency is like when we abandon our own needs to try to fix, support, control, manipulate a situation. And it usually looks like, and that's not like the definition of codependency is very big and many people have different definitions. But the way that I see that show up is with women, and the people pleasing is an aspect of it, is abandoning your own needs or making them smaller than they actually are, and centering the needs of your partner, because you're telling yourself inside, oh, it's okay. I got it. I can handle it. Or I don't really need that. Or And then later being resentful because you didn't directly presence your needs. So that's one way. That's one way, which is a, like I said, a codependent type of patterning. It's like, oh, I don't really need to be a person that has needs, but I can help and meet my partner's needs, and I'll just make mine smaller. That way they'll stay happy and they are the center in that way, right? So another way is, and I suppose this is kind of connected, is not being fully honest with ourselves or our partners. So people pleasing can all look like that. And if we're going to be honest now, we can call that lying, right? So people pleasing would be even in these micro moments where your partner is like, hey, do you want to have a ice cream for dessert? And you're like, and you know, like he's ready to get home. Okay. You know, he's ready to get home. You're like, oh, you really want that ice cream, but you know, he's ready to get home. And you're like, no, actually, I'm good. And these little moments build up over months and years of little moments where you've abandoned your desire. That's a desire. It's not a need for ice cream. And it's also a metaphor, right? So there are these moments where we make ourselves smaller for the other person, or we make our needs or desires smaller for the other person, or we actually lie about what it is that we want because we don't want to take up so much space, because that the rule of people pleasing is like, well, if I say what I really want, it may not please him. It may not please my partner. Like my partner may not be happy about that. So I'm just going to err on the side of caution, which brings in that martyr archetype. And I feel like these are ones that we saw modeled in women on television, maybe in our mothers, maybe in our grandmothers. And so it makes sense that it's still with us now. But I do think that it's very detrimental to intimacy. Even on the small level, like the example I gave, it's like we want to be able to just be honest and to risk being rejected. And that's the thing about people pleasing or abandoning your needs. If you put your needs forward, or if you say what you want, you may get rejected. Your partner may say, actually, I can't give you that. And so that's the risk. And a lot of us can't bear the discomfort of that risk.
Right. Oh, such good stuff. As we close up here, I'd love for you to speak to the women, especially who are either calling in love or are in a relationship where they don't feel very in love. Mm-hmm. I'd love for you to just speak something into their hearts that may help like ignite them again.
So this moment is a perfect moment to turn towards yourself and to turn towards the practice of feeling the depth of whatever is in your heart. And this may mean that you have to feel some grief or some tenderness, some sadness, some rage, but to feel what is in your heart. And underneath whatever that is, I want you to find the thing that you're yearning for. Maybe it's more attention from your already existing partner, or a deeper attention. Maybe you're yearning for a partnership that meets you where you are at this phase of your life. And I want you to feel that thing that you're yearning for. And I don't want you to just think it, but I want you to feel it through your body. And I want you to make sound around it. I want you to dance it. I want you to write a poem about it. I want you to pray it. And I want you to embody it. And I want you to do that as often as you can. I don't want you to tell your partner or tell your next date what it is that you're yearning for. I want it to be so embodied in you that he can feel it so deeply, and that it's an energetic call from your heart into life. And this takes first feeling any of the sticky emotions that are stuck in your heart, getting in the bathtub, putting on music, crying it out, screaming it out, feeling what's there, all the moments you self-abandoned, all the moments you felt rejected, whatever it is that's there, your sadness about being single, not bypassing this very important step, and then feeling the yearning underneath. That is your magical formula. I want you to do that. Do it for a month. DM me. Let me know how it goes.
I love that. That's So good. That's good for any of us, even, you know, that may not fit into those, that category. That's just
totally.
Just
I still exercise. Need to do this.
Yeah.
My partner is like, I want to feel what you're yearning for. And I'm like, but we're busy parents. He's like, yeah, but I still need to feel your heart.
Yeah. Such a good reminder. Well, this has been so juicy. As I knew it would be. Can you tell people where they can connect more with you about your books and any products or services you offer?
Yeah. So my first book, Fuck Like a Goddess, came out in 2020. And my second book, Dare to Feel, The Transformational Path of the Heart, came out of January of this year. Both are available where books are sold. I also have a membership community where I lead women in some of the practices that I spoke about here. And I see clients in one-on-one coaching containers. And all of that can be found on my website, alexandraroxo.com. And you can also find me on Instagram at alexandraroxo.
That's a great name. That's a great name, especially for what you do. It's just so powerful and feminine and awesome. So thank you so much. And congratulations again on your beautiful daughter and your love and just, you know, birthing a book and a being all in a very, you know, a short window.
It wasn't planned like that, but I'm glad that it happened.
Yeah. That's life, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Christine.